to order. Please stand for a moment of silence. Thank you. Please join me in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Bell.
Here.
Mr. Cartier. Ms. Diller. Ms. Hartley Nagel.
Here.
Mr. Hollins.
Here.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
Here.
Mr. Powers.
Here.
Mr. Sheldon.
Here.
Mr. Smiley.
Here.
Mr. Street.
Here.
Mr. Tackett. Mr. Weiner?
Here.
Mr. Woods?
Here.
Madam President, the roll reveals 12 present, 1 absent.
Thank you. And at this time, I'd like to recognize some elected officials. The Honorable Mike Kozakowski, our Recorder of Deeds. Please stand, Mike. Next, the Honorable Ken Bolden, our Clerk of the Peace. Please stand, Mr. Bolden. And the Honorable Sarah Papany, our Register of Wills, in the back. And now I invite them to present the colors.
Excuse me.
Thank you. I now ask Councilwoman Janet Kilpatrick and Councilman Bob Weiner to please escort the County Executive Matt Meyer into the chambers. County Executive Matthew Myers. Executive Myers, it's an honor to have you here this evening.
Thank you to the Council President. Good evening. To those of you who have joined us here today in Council Chambers, and to those watching online. Thank you also to Council President Pro Tem Hollins, all the members of County Council. Welcome also, I know they've already been recognized, but the Register of Wills is here, C.O. Papadi, Recorder Deeds, Mike Kozakowski, and Sheriff Sam Pratcher. A special welcome to Clerk of the Peace Ken Bolden with Ken tonight. This is Ken's 45th annual county budget address. Ken, I promise you, it will not be the longest. It will not be the longest. Welcome to any other elected officials who happen to be here tonight. Thanks also to the Chief of Police is here. Give the Chief of Police a round of applause. Chief of Emergency Medical Services. Chief of Emergency Communications. And actually, the Chief Administrative Officer, with all the general managers as well, can just raise their hand to be recognized. Thank you for what you do every day. I know a number of the leaders of the county unions are here. If you're a leader, if you're in leadership at one of the county unions, would you stand up to be recognized? Give them a round of applause. Thank you. Thank you for your leadership. And all county employees who are here tonight, thank you for the service that you provide to county residents every single day. You know, 8 months ago, on July 6th of last year, I was in the St. Andrews development in Bear. Christiana Fire Company volunteer firefighters were on the roof of a building, and several firefighters were running into the building to douse the flames. One firefighter had been hurt, I was told. It was in the emergency room at Christiana Hospital. 30 minutes later, as I walked into the hospital, Kevin Kalpithwaite, the deputy chief at Christiana Fire Company, sat up in bed. I spoke with him, and I'd never spoken to him before, but it seemed he actually wasn't injured at all. Kenny Dunn, who was with me, walked around behind the bed and told me to come look. The back of Mr. Kalpithwaite's neck had effectively melted away. Mr. Kalpithwaite, however, was calm. He had one concern. He wanted to get back to work. Like so many first responders, Mr. Kalpithwaite wears several hats. For 28 years, he's been a paramedic with the county and a volunteer firefighter. Months after that incident, I actually honored him at a countywide fire chiefs meeting. He arrived very late to that meeting because his paramedic shift ran late. He was out on a run where he administered care that literally saved someone's life that night in North Wilmington. Mr. Kalpithwaite retired from the county last week after 28 years. His last run, literally his last paramedic run of his county career, he responded to an opioid overdose and administered life-saving Narcan. He represents the best among us. I know a lot of first responders are in the room, and like so many of our paramedics and first responders, I'd like Mr. Kalpithwaite to please stand so we can all salute his service. Sophia Rose is a senior at Dickinson High School. Last month, Sophia and many of her high school peers across this state and across this country began to stand up and speak out. Children are not safe in schools today because of guns and current gun laws. Our job in public safety is to see around the next corner, to identify and defuse tragedy and disaster before it ever happens. Sophia, as a student, is standing up and demand that we do it better, that we do it smarter, and that we do it with some reasonable legal changes. It takes courage to stand up, and it takes strength to remain standing in the face of constant criticism. Representative John Lewis, an aide to Martin Luther King Jr., likes to say, you get in trouble, but you get in the right kind of trouble. Sophia and her peers have gotten a little trouble the last month, but it's the right kind of trouble. And we in this county, this state, and this country owe her and her student peers across this country a big thank you for standing up and speaking out. Ms. Rose, please stand so we can recognize your efforts. So tonight's about a budget. It's about bridging a structural deficit. It's about doing the math so our money does not run out and so we can perform the critical government services that we provide. First responders, our police force, our parks and libraries, our sewers, our sports leagues, land use, and affordable housing. But more than anything, tonight is about Kevin Copperthwaite and Sophia Rose. It's about the service our first responders provide and about the young adults of our county, our leaders of tomorrow, about paying our bills and providing the highest quality services so our county can win the future. Before we get into the details and the numbers, we wanted to take a moment to recognize some of the highlights of the fine work of this county council and so many in my administration since I was sworn in a little over a year ago. I'm going to highlight four of the items you see here. There's a national standard that 90% of 9/11 calls, 911 calls, should be answered within 10 seconds. In 2017, under Chief Miller's leadership, for the first time in the county's history, we achieved that standard, and we have continued to achieve it thus far this year. Last year, I stood here and highlighted our challenging budget situation. I said, we must continue to invest in our future, and we made historic investments in DNA technologies. In 2017, under Chief Bond's leadership, that technology helped us advance 125 police investigations. We will continue to make such investments, and those considering engaging in any crime of property or of person should know we have extraordinary technology today to find them and bring them to justice. For years, discussion has taken place with County Council to change county code to enable more solar power generation. With Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Tackett's sponsorship, and with Rich Hall's leadership, we got it done. Immediately after enacting legislation last year around solar power generation, an investor announced his company's plan to more than double solar generation capacity within our state from 92 megawatts to 192 megawatts. Newcastle County has been recognized by national organizations for our transparency efforts with regard to open checkbook. For the first time in county history, you can now view the expenditure of your taxpayer dollar online or on your phone at checkbook.nccde.org as easily as you can view your own bank statement. On August 17th of last year, Mark Kleinschmidt, a former county employee who I know a lot of people here today know, experienced chest pain after his morning workout. His daughter, Allison, a pediatric nurse who rarely misses a day of work, happened to stop by her parents' house that morning. Allison called 911 as her father collapsed, and she performed CPR until paramedics arrived and initiated advanced life support efforts. There was an entire team involved in the chain of survival for Mark, including 911 communicators, county paramedics, Aetna Hose, Hook, and Ladder, and the Volunteer Hose Company in Middletown. Mark required 7 shocks to restore a normal heart rhythm. Mark received the emergency treatment he needed, both at the scene and en route to the hospital, due to the coordinated efforts of this team, led by, of course, his daughter, who provided critical bystander CPR. I'd like to ask all of the individuals involved in Mark's survival, as well as Mark, to stand and be recognized. Thankfully, Mark's case of prompt treatment and an excellent outcome is not an isolated one here in Newcastle County. Our paramedics continue to perform above the national average. Our paramedics, under Chief Tan's leadership, are documenting a 50% survival rate, 50% survival rate for witnessed cardiac arrest cases. In a national database, the average reported survival rate for the same type of case is 30%. That means if you go into cardiac arrest in Newcastle County and 911 is called quickly, you have a better chance of walking out of the hospital safely than in many other locations across our country. That's something to be proud of. In fact, we recently recognized 52 individuals whose hearts stopped beating, were revived by first responders, and were released from the hospital with normal brain function and then returned to normal activity. 52 individuals last year. But as we will discuss tonight, with our current revenues, we simply do not have the resources to appropriately sustain such incredible life-saving progress. Another accomplishment that helps save lives is a smartphone application we launched last week called Pulse Point. With this app, you can be notified when there is a need for CPR within a quarter mile of your current location, helping to improve the response time through bystander CPR. All of us here should commit to doing two things. One, learn CPR. And second, download this Pulse Point app. We're also transforming, as shown above, vacant homes, increasing use of the library system, and reviewing development plans at record rates. We have a four-pronged strategy to address the opioid epidemic. We secured funding for the Hero Health Program in partnership with the federal government and the University of Baltimore. This program now diverts those with the disease of opioid addiction into the treatment that they need. When we came into office, we identified a gap in first responder resources. 6 months ago, if a fire company ambulance was the first to arrive at the scene of an opioid overdose, there was a good chance that ambulance would not be carrying life-saving medicine, the life-saving medicine, Narcan, because of the cost. Thanks to the generosity of every member of County Council and Jay and Jalpa Patel of Green Hill Pharmacy in Wilmington, today every first responder carries Narcan. Jay and Jalpa, I know Jay's here. Would you stand so we can show our appreciation for your support? In addition, we have hired a law firm to claim damages against those corporations causing this opioid harm and this financial drain on taxpayer resources. We recently announced a partnership with ChristianaCare to affirmatively channel those who called 911 with an emergency overdose into long-term treatment. It's an innovative partnership. There's really nothing like it across the country. Finally, leveraging the expertise of our paramedics, our EMS service throughout last year provided Narcan training to Newcastle County police officers and recruits, campus security constables, and other municipal police departments. Opioid addiction is the public health emergency of our generation. We are working harder and smarter to provide quality emergency services and address this epidemic at its roots. Tonight we're announcing NCC Innovates, supporting entrepreneurship programs by utilizing the existing small business structure established by Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Smiley. We do not have the millions of dollars our state government does to support job growth and attract companies here. But the number one way, regardless of the resources you have, the number one way to facilitate long-term job growth in any area is to start and build great companies right here at home. For new companies and small businesses, the $5,000 or $10,000 we're going to be offering through NCC Innovates could make a huge difference. In addition, we're expanding our summer youth employment program in collaboration with County Council, the City Foundation, and West End Neighborhood House. The program will expand to its largest ever, 174 paid summer work opportunities for youth coming from low-income and working-class families. We're focusing on new job creation efforts and blue-collar innovative opportunities, or blue tech, at the Port of Wilmington, the Newcastle County Airport that county residents actually own, in Claymont, and at the new Boxwood facility. Together, we can create thousands of jobs in the economy of tomorrow. But actually, nothing will provide job opportunities more than great educators in our schools, preparing all of our children with the soft skills and the hard skills needed for the innovative jobs of tomorrow, whether at our port, our airport, at Boxwood, or the Star Campus in Newark, anywhere in our county. Jordan Estock teaches what he calls authentic learning to his Concord High School engineering students. He facilitates his students' creation of devices to provide those with disabilities opportunities to be successful. I encourage everyone here to look up his TED Talk. It's extraordinary what he's doing. He's taking students at Concord High School and developing devices to help disabled adults among us. He has kids solving problems, math and science problems that adults simply are not solving. We need to make sure those amazing graduates from Mr. Estock's program at Concord have jobs to put their skills to use right here in New Castle County. Mr. Estock, please stand so we can recognize your service. You know, you're not just training engineering students who have great opportunities out of college. You're also educating students who will create our county's job-creating companies of tomorrow. So we're also making smart investments in the sustainable environmental future. The whole month of April is Earth Month here in New Castle County, and we will be hosting a number of important events starting next week. We will be expanding a set of priority pathways, walkways, and bikeways, both for recreation and commuting. We are collaborating with the City of Newark, state and federal governments, the University of Delaware, and local businesses on the Emerson Bike Bridge in Newark. We are investing in something called Edgemore Grows Together. Edgemore Grows Together, a community-initiated program that refashions the neighborhood intervention team in an economically disadvantaged neighborhood of the county. There, we are starting a safe after-school and weekend program for young people and actually creating the county's first new park in years. We're also reestablishing Carousel Park as a premier equestrian training center. We will continue enhancing our park system, including options in southern New Castle County, investing in a much-needed turf, soccer field in Banning Park, and supporting an indoor tennis center at Del Castle. So, our problem is, how do we pay for all of these important services? Starting in fiscal year 2013, 6 years ago, our expenditures, that red line, have been growing in excess of our revenues, which is that blue line. You cannot continue to spend money in your house without regard to the money you make, and neither can we here at the county. The consequence is a reserve balance that is nearly gone. For years prior to 2013, your county government saved to create a reserve balance of more than $54 million. The prior administration, however, depleted this reserve. So today, we have only about $20 million remaining. And if we continue on our current path, this account will be completely gone sometime next year. That's when you see the declining blue line crossing the $0 line. So how did we get here? The prior administration committed millions of dollars of additional expenditure without having the additional revenue to pay for it. Weeks before the prior election, my predecessor signed unfunded commitments, agreeing to contracts with each of the major employee unions of the county, adding over $60 million of salary expenses and $6.3 million in health care expenses over the next 10 years. Now, paying employees competitive benefits and wages is really important in attracting the highest quality workforce. But these are promises we should not make without having the revenue to pay these bills. In our 2015 bond sale, my predecessor committed to make interest-only debt payments until after the next election. As anyone who's taken an interest-only loan knows, those payments balloon and eventually become due. We simply do not have the increased revenues to pay for such increased costs, totaling $3.4 million over the next 20 years. My predecessor also committed to an additional $1 million in county services annually, without the revenue to pay for it. My predecessor financed operational expenditures like short-term equipment and computers through capital borrowing, which is effectively putting the cost of day-to-day expenditures on the credit card so someone else in the future has to pay for it. And my predecessor risked $3 million of taxpayer money to the Delaware Board of Trade with promises of hundreds of jobs that will never materialize. So that is where we are. What do we do now? Our budgeting priorities remain the same as I shared a year ago. We have to live within our means. I've instructed my team, and today I asked County Council to tackle this problem, the problem of expenses exceeding revenues, and address it definitively this year. We cannot continue to solve every problem by simply tapping reserves. because of this old political game, our county government will soon run out of money. Let's fix this six-year shortfall this year and pass a truly balanced budget. And let's do it in a way that our property taxes remain competitive. We must reduce our debt spending. The temptation to put increased capital expenses on the credit card must be resisted, particularly with increasing interest rates. We must continue to govern honestly and efficiently, delivering the highest level of service to our residents. And we must govern collaboratively for improved government service. We have a lot of governments and school districts and police forces in our small state. This only works if we work together to create taxpayer value. In spite of today's financial challenges, let's also continue to invest aggressively in our future. In our first 14 months in office, we've reduced annual expenditures by about $6.5 million without eliminating any service. We've saved $4.1 million by reducing personnel costs. We've saved $500,000 in the first two construction contracts using a bidding process that we, in collaboration with this council, revised last year, an effort led by Councilman Hollins and Cartier. We've saved over $900,000 by terminating certain contractual services and streamlining operations. We've saved $100,000 in non-paramedic overtime costs, and we've saved $1 million in reduced county vehicle purchases. Leadership starts with my office, and we are on track to save over $600,000 in expenditures by the end of my first 18 months. The blue bar there shows 18 months, the last 18 months in the previous administration, the expenses, approaching $4 million, compared with the gray bar, which represents 18 months of actual and projected spending in my executive office. We also are taking significant steps for smarter governance in the next fiscal year. We are enhancing tax collections through the most collaborative and comprehensive vacant housing initiative in county history. I know County Council heard something about that this afternoon. The goal of this initiative is to revitalize neighborhoods plagued by vacant properties. But we are already seeing tens of thousands of dollars in increased collections as a result of this effort. We are also partnering for the first time with school districts to collect long-term delinquent property taxes and engaging in new practices for short-term delinquent property tax collection, efforts that have already generated $1.5 million of additional revenue. For the first time, we're making a serious effort to collect back taxes from your neighbors who simply are not paying their fair share. When we started the budget process months ago, I gave the general managers of all departments a directive to build their fiscal year 19 budget with the same exact money they had in their fiscal year 18 budget, leading to 0% growth. It's unprecedented in county history to do something like this, but this work resulted in the detail you see on the right side of the screen. We're proposing salary reductions tonight of $3.5 million through attrition, elimination of vacant positions, and reduction in overtime and seasonal positions. Also, we will achieve over $500,000 in workers' compensation savings due to the great work of our risk management team. The reductions also include operational cost savings of $515,300 and $57,100 of savings in various technology initiatives. At no cost to county taxpayers, departments participated in a performance review and identified other cost reduction opportunities. We're currently looking at multiple initiatives identified. We haven't committed to any of these yet, but we're looking at them. Standardizing paramedic response vehicle chassis, optimizing copy and printer management, optimizing smartphone usage, exploring online inspection scheduling technology for land use inspections, and instituting out-of-state participation fees for special events. So, after all of this, smarter governance measures, where are we? Well, we're here. With salary and health benefit expenditures, along with debt service costs that we cannot afford with our current stream of revenue. If you look at our expenditures, take a closer look, over 88% of our expenditures are locked in the contract, signed and approved by my predecessor before I came into office. Nearly three-quarters, 74.7% in employee contracts and 13.7% in long-term debt contracts to build and repair our libraries, parks, public safety, and government buildings. Even with the reduction in spending I outlined, if we continue on this path, as shown in the descending blue line, we are projected to be out of money, out of our stabilization reserve, by the end of next year. Keep in mind that while this is happening with our finances, the service demands, as I think all council members know, and many employees who are here, the service demands keep getting steeper. Here, for example, I'm showing you the challenge with our paramedic service. With an aging population and the opioid epidemic, the orange line shows that in 2005, we had 24,045 calls for service. And if you follow that orange line up, you'll see that in 2017, last year, we had 36,966 calls for service, an increase in calls of over 50%. At the same time, state financial support for the state government required service, shown by the red line, has decreased from 60% 13 years ago, to a 24% reimbursement rate today. The blue line shows how, because of our limited funding, paramedic staffing has remained almost the same. So we've gone to the state. With the collaboration of many on county council, we've requested to be treated the same as Wilmington, who charge a hotel tax. There's actually a higher tax rate now if you stay in a hotel in Wilmington than if you stay in Newcastle County outside of Wilmington. And we've asked the state government to allow us to change that, simply so that the hotel tax rates are the same. We've asked to restore the state reimbursement of our paramedic service back to 50%. And we've asked for a cap on the first-time home buyer tax exemption. You know, last year, this exemption, this first-time homebuyer exemption, was given to someone who bought a nearly $2 million home. This state-required tax exemption gives important assistance to homebuyers who need help to close their first home purchase. It's important, but it must not be a tax break for the wealthy. So we've asked the state to allow us to impose a cap above a certain level. The first-time homebuyer exemption would not apply. For each of these issues, you and County Council have strongly voiced your support for changes to state law. But we need you, all of you here, and all of you watching tonight, to communicate with your state legislators to make sure these important initiatives are passed in Dover in the next several months. Again, this graph shows our reserve balance. Once that blue line goes to zero, we have no money to stabilize our budget. The blue solid line shows the current decline in our reserves. The red dotted line shows the improvement in reserve levels by implementing the fiscal year 19 budget, the smarter governance package we are proposing tonight. The black dotted line, a little bit higher than the red dotted line, shows the decline in reserve balance with the smarter governance package and the state revenue package, assuming a 3% hotel tax and a restoration of the paramedic reimbursement to 30%. You can see how all of these efforts enable our reserve fund to last a little bit longer, but a reserve fund that has $0 in 2 years with all of these initiatives still is not solving our problem. So, this is how we balance the budget. Our smarter governance measures plus the state revenue package plus a 15% increase in property taxes. Today, the average homeowner pays $433 per year in county property taxes. We propose that average homeowner pay $65 more per year, $5.41 more per month, or 18 cents more per day. This would be the first county property tax increase since 2009. With this balanced budget plan, we will immediately recruit a new paramedic class, addressing the gap we highlighted earlier between calls for paramedic service and staffing. We also will have funding to sustain our current police operations, our 911 center, parks, and libraries for years to come. So I wanted to take a minute to show you an actual tax bill so we see the real impact this would have. Thank you, Councilman Smiley, for letting us share your tax bill as an example. Highlighted in green at the top is the county property tax line in the overall bill. This $300.56 is the portion that would change in this year's bill. Councilman Smiley would pay $45.08 per year more, or 12 cents more per day. His overall tax bill, including county and school taxes, would increase only 3.5% from $1,286 to $1,331. This is Councilman Smiley, but if you'd like to know how this proposed tax change would affect you, we're setting up a website, and you'll soon be able to view that, your particular tax bill, or your increase under the proposal at mybill.nccde.org. As everyone in this room knows, we have extremely competitive property taxes, among the lowest in the country. That's a good thing, and tonight we are reaffirming our commitment to keep it that way. If you look at property tax rates for Newcastle County and 16 neighboring jurisdictions, including our school taxes, you will see the only area with lower property tax rates are Kent and Sussex County. And with all due respect to our sister counties, they do not need to pay the $68 million we pay annually to maintain our great county police force. You can see this change tonight, with this change tonight, our effective average property tax rate will increase from 0.77%, that orange bar, to 0.79%, that red bar. This modest increase we propose will enable us to keep these property taxes low with the highest quality services for the foreseeable future. With this plan, our revenues and expenses will be balanced, as evidenced by that top green dotted line showing a stabilized reserve fund. This fund can again be what it should be, a source of tax stabilization in the future when we confront difficult and unique budget challenges. Let's look at the alternative. We do have choices, and we absolutely have chosen the most responsible option. County residents want services, and we will deliver those services efficiently. If you and County Council, and if we as a community were to decide that this modest tax increase or the state revenue package is not something we want, we would be forced to make substantial reductions in our services to the public. These are reductions that I do not think anyone actually wants. But we will be spending the next 6 weeks traveling across this county with your council persons to hear from you, including our first two meetings tomorrow night at Claymont Fire Hall and tomorrow and Thursday evening at Shumadil Middle School. So how can we balance our budget without raising taxes? What would it take for the revenues we expect in the next year to equal expenses without raising taxes? What we've done here is reduce spending equally across all departments of county government to show what would happen if we tried to balance the budget without the revenue increases we propose tonight. If the choice were made not to increase the hotel tax or the property tax, this is what a balanced budget would look like. The result would be, quite frankly, compromised public safety. We would need to stop proactive policing and decrease community policing. Police departments a generation ago would wait for 911 calls and respond to those 911 calls. Today we require proactive policing, walking neighborhoods and engaging in communities. To balance our budget, we would need to go back to our old way of policing, and that's not right. If a choice were made not to increase the hotel tax and paramedic reimbursement, you would see longer paramedic response times and slower 911 call response times. You would see a 10% reduction in funding to support the volunteer fire service. When lives are at stake, we must not cut corners, and this tax increase is the smart and courageous thing to do to sustain the highest quality emergency response in our community. Again, to balance our budget without any tax increase, we would also need to close two major parks, 12 district parks, and stop mowing in all of our neighborhood parks. To balance our budget without any tax increase, you would see dramatically reduced library services. We'd likely have to close one of our largest libraries, along with a smaller library like Ellesmere, or we could reduce funding for the library right here in Wilmington. We'd also need to close Rockwood Museum, or likely shut down the subsidies we provide for our county sports leagues. So if you take one message tonight, I want it to be this. I will not sign a budget that continues this same practice of being out of balance. It is irresponsible and dishonest governance. We must pay our bills. I will not sign a budget that continues to tap reserves to pay for operational expenses for which we don't have enough revenue. Let's collaborate together to raise revenue and fix these problems this year for the long term. Tonight, we propose a $291 million operating budget highlighted in green and a $48 million capital budget highlighted at the bottom there in blue. Our projected revenues are $186 million this year. When you add in the revenue increases we're talking about, it's an additional $23.9, almost $24 million. That's from the property tax increase, the restoration of the state paramedic reimbursement, a hotel tax, and the cap on the first-time homebuyer exemption. Our projected expenses are based on this year, $201 million of current year expenses, plus $10 million of cost drivers, and $6 million of reductions in reallocations. So with this budget I'm proposing tonight, for the first time in over 6 years, we will not be spending more than we take in as revenue. Below the green line, you can see the list of cost drivers for the year, including over $6.7 million in personnel-related costs. And here on the next slide, you can see smaller increased costs across county government. $6.7 million of that $10.6 million of cost drivers of increased cost is personnel costs. So we will continue to make smart investments in public safety that produce value, including the WAVE panic button, which allows the police to enter a facility virtually in a time of crisis, instantly having visibility to cameras in our schools, community centers, and other public buildings, again, in a time of emergency or crisis. We continue to increase staffing in our 911 center, providing more efficient response times and lower levels of overtime. And our commitment to volunteer fire companies continues. So, what is the most important public health innovation since our county was founded in 1673? The most important public health innovation. I realize there are many around today who may say television, or cell phones, or the Xbox, but when you think about public health, what really keeps us safe are public underground sewer system. Did you know that there are 1,653 miles of county sewer pipe running under this county? 1,653 miles of county sewer pipe. Laid end to end, well, don't try this at home, but laid end to end, those pipes would stretch from Wilmington to Denver, Colorado. Every day, we are responding to requests for service, treating pipes for grease buildup, and pulling unique discarded items out of the system, including an intact road sign, and not too long ago, even we pulled an engine block out of our sewers. So think about that when you see one of the 44,265 manholes across the county. We have a structural deficit in our sewer fund similar to our general fund. If you've not learned anything tonight, I do not tolerate spending money that we do not have, drawing down reserves. And tonight we also propose a 12% sewer fee increase to provide financial stability, long-term financial stability to our sewer operations. That's an increase of about $30 for the average homeowner, which is an 8-cent increase per day. This will provide a balanced sewer operation for the foreseeable future and also enable us to make smart investments in our aging sewer infrastructure. Our projected sewer-free revenue, as you can see here, is $72.6 million, and tonight we propose an additional $10.9 million in revenue. Our fiscal year 2018 expenses, this year's expenses, are $4.1 million, with an additional $4.6 million of forecasted expenses in the next fiscal year, and we propose reductions of over $2.3 million to keep our sewer budget this year in balance. Of the $4.6 million in forecasted increased expenses, nearly three-quarters are personnel-related. Increased costs, again, handed to us by the prior administration. Below the green line are the cost drivers for the sewer fund. $3.1 million of the increase are personnel-related. Our sewer fund struggles from the same problem as our general fund. Increasing personnel and debt costs all locked into contracts that were signed before I came into office without any plan to pay for them. Tonight we propose a $48.2 million capital budget, including over $27.4 million of sewer and stormwater projects and over $20.7 million of parks, public safety, technology, and plant operation investments, broken down into the areas you see on the pie chart. While more than half of our capital investments will go to maintenance and repair of our extensive sewer network, in this presentation, this screen here, you can see various public safety, library parks, farmland preservation, and countywide infrastructure projects we are proposing. From communications infrastructure upgrades to the site selection and design of a Southern Newcastle County Regional Library to enhancements at multiple parks. We look forward to discussing these investments in more detail and collaborating with County Council to make them a reality for you. In closing, this is one of the toughest county budgets that we have seen in years. When we came into office last year, we were handed millions of dollars of bills, increased expenditures for which we simply do not have the revenue to pay. We could keep tapping the reserve, but that is irresponsible and it will be depleted by the end of next year. We could eliminate all position vacancies and reduce spending dramatically, but if we do the math, this spending will result in sharp cuts to service levels. Services that our citizens want and expect, and in some cases, need to survive. Our best option is to be responsible, to continue to reduce spending, and moderately increase our property tax and sewer rates. We can keep such rates as the most competitive in the region while sustaining our county's finances and supporting our first responders, our parks, and our libraries for years to come. Budgets are really about priorities, all these numbers. It's about what are we about, what do we want our county to be. And that commitment, a commitment to win the future, to long-term fiscal responsibility, is what we owe our first responders, individuals like Kevin Cowperthwaite, literally running into burning buildings on a daily basis, our strong young leaders like Sophia Rose, and educators like Jordan Estock, helping to prepare the leaders for tomorrow's economy. Thank you, and have a good night.
Thank you, County Executive Mettmeyer, for your 2018 budget address. Now at this time, will Ms. Kilpatrick and Mr. Councilman Weiner please escort County Executive Mettmeyer? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.